Welcome to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Sabrina Halverson. We are focusing on almonds today with My Ag Life and Almonds. Taylor Chalstrom joins us later with an interview on almond stockpile management, but first joining me on the phone is Richard Waycott, the President and CEO of the Almond Board of California.
Richard, thank you again for taking my call today. I wanted to talk about the report that came out, the California Almond Objective Measurement Report, and it shows a slight decrease from last year's number and from what was expected, the forecast, I guess, for this year's. And I wanted to get your thoughts on that. We had such a big year, it seems, last year. Are these numbers for this year more normal?
Well, if you look back a couple of years, really starting in 2018, between 2018 and 2020, so two crop years, California almond production grew by 37%, which is just unprecedented. It was about 840 million pounds of additional volume in those 2 years that was created. And so we've come off of these two mega sort of bumper crop years, and we saw some extraordinary yields per acre that contributed to those bumper crops. And you know, the conventional wisdom was that typically, you know, orchards get a little tired after producing that much and sort of tend to, take a year off or whatever, decline for a little bit, and then maybe they resume something close to those yields. But so that was expected. And then I think the effects of the drought and deficit irrigation that is going on in certain parts of the state contributed to the lower number as well. So we had, you know, a lot of industry folks sort of thinking in that 2.8 to 2.9 range, maybe a little higher. The subjective estimate, which came out in May, was at 3.2 billion. So this was a reduction of 400 million pounds in terms of the difference between the two estimates that are produced by the National Agricultural Statistics Service, which is part of USDA. So I think, you know, for the reasons I mentioned, a slightly smaller crop this year seems reasonable.
And then, of course, we need to talk about the drought. You brought it up as well. You know, we keep asking our growers to grow as much or more with less water or no water in some cases. And how much of an effect will that continue to have?
Well, my experience, and I think most in the industry, dates back to the last drought, which was in the mid-2010s, so 2013, 14, 15, those years. And what we saw was that, you know, some growers that are in the most precarious places in terms of groundwater supply or poor groundwater quality were the ones that were really affected the most. Some of those, you know, pushed out their orchards at that time. I think some growers now are looking out at the future and maybe taking out orchards sooner than they would have, just because, you know, by replanting a new orchard, you can reduce your water consumption during the early years, and maybe they're making that decision. And then others will do what they did last time, which is use best practice in terms of deficit irrigation and try and get through the summer the best way they can, produce whatever crop they can this summer. And then, you know, we always, in farming, you've got your fingers crossed that we're going to have a decent precipitation year this fall and this winter. So so those are sort of, I think, what's going on in terms of a grower decision-making right now.
And can we talk a little bit about demand? It seems like demand is still very strong for California almonds.
Yes, so we, I think I'd like to acknowledge and compliment our industry. As I mentioned, we've grown 37% in 2 years, which is just incredible, especially coming off of a large volume base to begin with. And we had to harvest that and process it and ship it and sell it and ship it. And, you know, almond pricing has been lower this past year due to, you know, such large supply that's out there, but also due to the uncertainties that COVID presented, that some of the foreign markets, you know, the experiences they were going through in terms of lockdowns, and then the West Coast port situation, which you've probably heard about, which has been going through a lot of congestion and difficulty in getting containers and so on. And, you know, with all that, our industry's shipped globally, we're up over 20% this year versus last year, and exports are up 30% over last year. So despite everything, you know, we've been able to sell this and ship most of it. Probably would have had higher numbers if we hadn't had the port problems. But it's just a testament, I think, to the value that the global consumer sees in almonds and the consumer products companies that produce, you know, the myriad products that are produced with almonds as an ingredient. And when there's a larger supply, granted, there's a price advantage. At the same time, we're able to place this product globally, and the market's there for it, and the consumers are there for it. So you know, all around, you know, not a great economic year for the industry, but certainly we've been very successful in marketing the product.
All right. And then overall, as people are hearing, you know, snippets about the report, what do you want them to know overall about the report?
Well, I think that they should look at it in terms of how we're finishing up this current crop year, which ends at the end of this month. Even though our shipments have been record every month this year except for January, the overall inventory that we're going to end up at the end of this month, which we call the carry-in, so what inventory is left of this, of the 2020 crop that's going into the 2021 crop year, and that number will be higher than normal just because we had so much to ship, not that much higher, but maybe 200 million pounds higher than we normally would have or what we predicted for this year. And then with a crop year next year that's forecast now to be 300 million pounds below the 2020 crop, you're sort of ending up with a wash there in terms of the numbers. And so I would take from this report that we have a steady supply going into next year. We've got a larger market demand than we've ever had. We have prices that have increased quite significantly just since Monday, since that report came out. And so I think it bodes well economically for the industry in 2021-2022, where hopefully we'll be able to readily market this quote-unquote steady supply at better returns for our growers.
Thank you again to Richard Wacott, President and CEO of the Almond Board of California. Our news brief is up next. We will be right back.
The Crop Consultant Conference returns live in person on September 16th and 17th in Visalia, California. Co-hosted by Progressive Crop Consultant Magazine and the Western Region Certified Crop Advisors Association, this must-attend conference features 2 days of educational seminars, a live trade show, and honorariums and scholarships given by Western CCA, including the CCA of the Year Award. Hear the top experts in their field speak on pest management, artificial intelligence and new technologies, as well as the latest on soil health, nitrogen, and irrigation management. DPR and CCA credits will be available over the 2 days. For more information on credits, topics, and registration, visit progressivecrop.com/conference. Agromiora Nursery is the premier nursery in California. Whether it's almonds, walnuts, pistachios, prunes, or olives, Agromiora has been the grower's source for over 20 years and is the home of Rootpack R Almond, Grizzly Walnut, and the North American plants UCB1 and Platinum Clonal Pistachio Rootstocks. As the worldwide leader in super high-density almonds, olives, and prunes, Agromiora can show you how to cut costs and increase yields with their super high-density rootstock Rootpack 20. For more information or to schedule a site visit, contact a representative at 530-812-3398 today.
Welcome back. Here's our news brief for today. The nominee for USDA Undersecretary for Marketing and Regulatory Programs, Jennifer Moffitt of California, stressed during her confirmation hearing that the animal disease surveillance and phytosanitary data work are both keys for protecting U.S. farm exports. Producers and exporters know well the export toll of BSE, foot and mouth, swine flu, and other animal diseases that have in the past cost billions of dollars in losses. And so does the current California Undersecretary for Food and Agriculture, Jennifer Moffitt, who would supervise USDA's APHIS and AMS if the Senate confirms her as Undersecretary for Marketing and Regulatory Programs.
surveillance in animals is important for animal health and also for public health, and that the need for an early warning system is crucial. Just like the work that we do in partnership, we at our state do in partnership with APHIS on plant diseases, really focusing on exclusion first, monitoring.
Also critical for farm and ranch exports is data work to highlight the science behind sanitary and phytosanitary claims, both here and abroad.
I know APHIS is in many ways the underpinning of trade through their work that they do on attestations and the like. And so I will, should I have the opportunity to be confirmed, I look forward to engaging with APHIS on this so that we can open new markets and that we can continue the markets that we currently enjoy.
Moffitt says her California walnut farm was able to sell the organic nuts to South Korea after APHIS used science and data to address that country's phytosanitary concerns. Moffitt would also oversee USDA efforts to reform GIPSA rules on livestock market competition and those dealing with the market of products from genetically engineered crops and animals. A USDA resource that supports regional dairy businesses and innovation includes funding allocated to create new innovative initiative centers. Rod Bain reports.
Fostering innovative ways to expand dairy markets and products. That's the intent of USDA's Dairy Business Innovation Initiative.
The initiatives are regional innovation centers, and they fund projects that help develop higher value uses for dairy products, diversify farm income through, say, new activities and marketing, and to encourage the use of regional milk production.
Plus technical assistance for dairy producers, according to Deputy Undersecretary for Marketing and Regulatory Programs, Mei Wu. Over $20 million in grant funding is currently available for these initiatives.
$18.4 million of that is going to our current Dairy Business Innovation Initiative at the University of Tennessee, the Vermont Agency of Agriculture, and then the University of Wisconsin. But we're also looking for organizations to host new initiatives.
With application submission due August 30th electronically through www.grants.gov. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Interest rates on agricultural loans made by commercial banks have increased slightly for some types of lending. However, the Federal Reserve of Kansas City says the rate stayed historically low through the first half of this year. The average rate on non-real estate loans was about 30 basis points higher than the all-time low reached at the end of 2020. The rise was largely consistent across all types of loans. In contrast, the average rates on farm real estate loans continued to decline and marked another historic low. Rates also remained comparatively low at the largest commercial banks, and those lenders offered a sizable discount for the lowest risk loans, while the smaller lenders continue to provide similar accommodation regardless of the risk. The Fed's report says despite the slight increase in rates for operating loans, the historically low interest rate environment and muted demand for agricultural lending suggest that interest expenses have remained low relative to recent years. Profitability in the sector also continued to be supported by strong prices for most major commodities. The slight decline in financing costs for farm real estate may also provide ongoing support to farmland values. The latest USDA update on agricultural trade continues to show remarkable increases in U.S. exports. Gary Crawford has this report.
Before we get to this report on ag trade, we have to tell you it was made possible by the almost superhuman efforts of USDA economist and trade tracker Bart Kenner, who, because of some timing issues and the 4th of July holiday, had to stay up all night Sunday the 5th to work on and complete his ag trade update for us. Just a very impressive performance there.
To drum up some additional sympathy, have one hand on the keyboard while the other arm is holding a newborn and
a two-month-old baby. But Bart, you got it done.
It's a sacrifice I'm willing to make.
Oh, stoic Bart Kenner. So are we ready to go?
I've got some numbers.
Okay. Some of those say that for the first 8 months of this fiscal year, October through May, the U.S. has done $121.6 billion worth of ag export business.
Up 28% from previous year.
And Bart Kenner says exports of almost every product are up from a year ago. Now, Bart, if you can stay awake, can you give us a few of the numbers for, say, the bulk type commodities?
Sure.
Okay. Go ahead.
Exports of wheat were $4.5 billion in fiscal year to date, October through May 21. That's up 13% from $4 billion in the same period, 2020. Corn, $12.3 billion, up 135%. Soybeans, $23.5 billion, up 96% from last year.
Now, USDA has been forecasting the total ag exports will hit $157 billion this fiscal year. Now, we're already at 121.6, 4 months left in the fiscal year. We only need about $35.5 billion more to hit that forecast. Or, Bart, if we just look at it monthly, what does that amount to?
The average amounts that we would need to hit seem to be well below what our current pace is.
Okay, I'm going to do the math here. We need a bit over $8.8 billion a month. We're currently averaging over $15 billion every month. So, Bart, for me to project that we will likely make or break that $157 billion forecast, would that be an accurate thing?
Pretty accurate.
Wow. First time I've ever been accurate on anything in my whole
Congratulations.
Life.
Congratulations. I'm glad to be a part of it.
Yeah, me too. Glad you could stay awake for it. Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Late last week, the first cases of African swine fever in domestic hogs appeared in Germany. Reuters says the ASF discovery could make negotiations about lifting existing import bans with China and other major buyers more difficult. However, experts predict no major impact will hit the German pork market right away. The disease was confirmed last Friday on two small farms in the same location where more than 1,200 cases have been found in wild boar. It likely will not have a major impact on the country's pork market because Germany's exports are already subject to bans from many countries outside of the EU. China and many other pork buyers banned German pork imports back in September of 2020 after the first ASF case was confirmed in wild animals. But German pork sales to other members of the EU continued. The American Soybean Association and 70 other business groups expressed concerns to U.S. Trade Representative Catherine Tai regarding proposed tariffs on Vietnam. The imposed tariffs would respond to a pair of Section 301 investigations initiated under the Trump administration, alleging currency manipulation and illegal timber practices. In a letter sent last week to the ambassador, the organization strongly urged the USTR not to use tariffs in response to either of those investigations. That's our news brief for today. Taylor Chalstrom is up next. We will be right back.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
Soil and Crop Incorporated is your number one resource for sustainable nutrition. Growers are faced with difficult challenges, and Soil and Crop Inc. has the experience, fertilizer, and biological portfolio to dramatically increase yield and performance in your troubled orchards and fields. Contact Soil and Crop Incorporated today for a free consultation on how we can help reverse the challenges you face as a conventional or organic grower so you can increase your bottom line and become a better sustainable farmer. Contact us today at 559-564-1236 or visit our website at www.callnrg.com. Soil and Crop, putting nature to work for you.
Hi, welcome to My Ag Life. Today we're talking with Tim Birmingham, Director of Quality Assurance and Industry Services at Almond Board of California, and Guangwei Huang, Associate Director of Food Research and Technology, about almond stockpile management. Welcome, Tim and Guangwei.
Yeah, thanks, Taylor. Thanks for having us.
Thank you for both being here with me today. Thanks. Tim, I'd like to ask the first question to you. Larger almond harvests mean many huller sheller facilities will need to build stockpiles until nuts can be processed. What do processors need to do to properly manage their stockpiles?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, I would like to say that stockpiling has been a part of the industry for many, many years. You know, so it's not something that we're just tackling right now as the crop size keeps increasing. It's something that the industry has had to deal with over the years because we don't have all of the instantaneous capacity to haul and shell the almonds as they're coming in. It's a very condensed harvest window and relatively large crop and keeps getting larger. So therefore, you have to create these stockpiles so that you can work your way through these stockpiles over a period of time. So that necessitates the need for these stockpiles. And it's something the industry is quite used to. However, you know, there's some things that definitely you need to be doing as a hauler, sheller, or a grower to make sure that you're properly maintaining the quality of those almonds that are put into the stockpile. And really, I think the main thing, and Guangwei will talk more about this as well, is moisture. You have to control the moisture of the almonds that are going into these stockpiles. If you don't control the moisture, you can have a lot of problems that develop. You can have concealed damage, which results in an interior brown spot of the almond once it's processed. And that creates challenges for the end user because it doesn't necessarily manifest itself until it's been subjected to a heat type process. You can have other issues such as mold growth. And we know that, you know, certain molds such as Aspergillus can produce aflatoxin, and that's a big concern for the industry. Particularly when you look at where our product is going, we ship a lot of product to the European market. The European market has tighter tolerances for aflatoxin than what we have here in the US. If we're not able to adequately control the levels of aflatoxin in our product, that's a problem. We'll see more rejections in the EU, and that's very costly. So we want to do everything that we can here on our end, really, to maintain that quality, to make sure that the almonds in the stockpiles are handled properly and make sure that we're monitoring the moisture. So some things that really, I think both the growers and the processors need to be in lockstep with is that moisture coming in out of the field. And so really, as a guideline, what we like to say is that the kernel moisture should be less than 6%, the hull moisture less than 12%, or that total fruit, you know, the in-hull, in-kernel, in-shell moisture at less than 9%. If you look at those as benchmarks and you don't put almonds into stockpiles that are at higher levels than those values, then you should be okay. So you really want to control that moisture, you know, coming in. And like I said, it needs to be, you know, communication between the grower and the hauler or sheller. It needs to be in lockstep on making sure that that moisture is met. You know, some other things that the haulers need to be aware of. They need to build these stockpiles and they need to build them in a manner that's going to minimize additional problems that could occur once they're in the stockpiles. So some things that we like to advise when you choose the location for your stockpiles, look to see if you can elevate those stockpiles or, you know, at least get them on a slightly sloped surface so that you can, you know, avoid any moisture that's pooling in the stockpile. You want to drain away any excess moisture that may accumulate. You're going to cover these stockpiles. So when you cover them, you want to, you know, again, you want to do some things that are going to minimize the formation of moisture or pockets of moisture in those stockpiles. So you want to look at flat tops, you know, long stockpiles that are orientated from north to south. That's going to minimize moisture buildup underneath the tarps. You want to look at white on black tarps if possible. That's going to help minimize temperature fluctuation in the stockpile. Temperature fluctuation can cause moisture to develop up on the underside of the tarps and create, you know, pockets of moisture. So that's something that you want to do if possible. I think, you know, once the almonds are in the stockpile, one of the main things is really, you know, understanding what's happening as far as a humidity standpoint or a moisture standpoint in that stockpile. And so that's going to dictate, you know, really how you manage that stockpile. If you're monitoring the moisture in that stockpile, you're looking at the relative humidity, then you can make some decisions as to whether or not you need to vent that stockpile on a periodic basis. And if the humidity in that stockpile is, you know, around 65% or less, I think generally you're okay. If you start to climb above that value, you really need to be looking at management strategies to to vent that stockpile on a regular basis to prevent, you know, moisture from building up. So that's kind of it in a nutshell. I think Wang Wei can add some more context around the importance of making sure that we're managing moisture in these stockpiles.
Yeah, definitely, Guang Wei. Obviously, responsibility for proper stockpile management not only falls on the processor, but also falls on the grower here. What measures do you think growers should take during harvest to ensure that a quality crop is delivered for stockpiling?
So, Taylor, you are right. Definitely, this is the responsibility should not only on the hauler shallers, but the other growers can play a huge role in ensuring the quality crop delivered for stockpiling. Many, you know, on the moisture, they really need to deliver properly dry fuel run to the hauler shallers. If they deliver wet product or marginal product to the hauler shallers, it's going to cause a big headache for hauler shallers. Actually, sometimes the hauler shallers will not able to handle those high moisture fuel runs. So it's really, you know, there's a couple of things that growers can do. Definitely, they should not rush to shake the tree. Monitor the tree, the lot maturity closely. Only shake the tree at the proper time to allow most drying occur when not on still on the trees. That's a much cleaner, a shorter drying. And then, you know, you shake it too early, the product, high moisture product drop on the ground, it take a longer time to dry on the ground. Also, before they shake the tree, they really need to prepare for the harvest. They need to sanitize the orchard, level the orchard, get rid of the debris from the orchard ground so that they have cleaner product. When after they shake the tree, after a few days drying, because the lots fall in the windrow, or fair in the tree rows, they dry unevenly. There is a couple percentage point difference between the tree row and the wind row. So really after a few days, a couple of days drying on the ground, the grower are encouraged to wind row and they use a conditioner to remove those debris and leaves, allowing more even drying so that can have a better drying. So before, they need to closely monitor the moisture level by their some quick device or simple device or by their experience. They need to test the kernel moisture by their experience or use the equipment from different spots of orchard, because sometimes there's uneven dry in a different zone of orchard. So they had to make sure the most of the moisture from most of the zone areas reach the moisture to the safe moisture level. As a team mentioned, ideally should be less than 6% in the kernel moisture, less than 12% in whole moisture, or less than 9% in in-whole lot moisture. However they measure it, they should use either of those should work. So make sure most of the spots that lots from most areas fall in the safe moisture level before they decide to pick up. When they pick up, if the moisture is still in the marginal, they need to try to pick up most lots at the maybe afternoon time. So that allowing that sunlight come out to chase some moisture, the morning moisture or light moisture away, so that they have a little drier product to deliver to the orchards. So the real key is really managing moisture level, deliver dry, properly dry product to the hauler shallers. So it can avoid so much issue you're gonna encounter at the hauler shallers side.
You mentioned that there are some ways that these growers can detect kernel moisture, test kernel moisture. Can you go in a little bit about what some of the ways are that they can test their kernel moisture?
There is some quick equipment, like a short, simple moisture meter based on humidity. Actually, the one company, one Australian company developed the equipment, the moisture meter, distributed through the floral industry. So they can measure the kernel moisture, they can measure the hole moisture, very portable unit. They can carry with them, just grinding the hole and shell in a small, simple device. They can measure the written moisture in a few minutes. So they can measure those. And then most of the growers are actually very experienced. When they bite into the kernel, they know what the moisture level can look like. So it's actually empirical experience can help too. So it's really, it's just the key is they have to spot check in many spots, make sure the representative of testing being done throughout the whole orchard, because they're quite often, you know, there is uneven drying in a different part of the orchard.
Exposure to some of that excess moisture in the orchard can also be problematic for aflatoxin contamination and concealed damage, which in turn affect food safety and quality of these almonds. Guangwei, how can drying be expedited at the grower processor level in order to prevent some of those issues from occurring?
Yeah, Tanner, as you said, excessive high moisture exposure will cause a couple of concerns. One concern is aflatoxin contamination. The other concern is related to quality, concern damage formation. So those is also related to the high heat exposure, because the higher moisture in stockpile, they can generate the heat. So create the perfect condition for mold growth, for the condition to form aflatoxin. So the key is really managing moisture of the lot or field run, as I mentioned by team. You know, this is very critical. The moisture management is the key. So as we, from our study research, we understand at the moisture, kernel moisture less than 6%. So it should have a relatively non-shelf stability, but between 6 to 8%, it's a marginal. So sometimes there's, some enzymatic activity or biological activity in the kernel can happen. This can cause quality deterioration. At the moisture greater than 8% for the prolonged period, the concern damage can form. So that causes issue. Some mold can grow, can populate, and produce aflatoxin at the high temperature, high heat condition. So this is so there's a different levels. So that's why we advise grower to deliver product when the moisture less than 6%. But if there's a marginal issue, you know, like between 6 and 8% is marginal. So caller shower had to pay attention to those the truck loads or fuel runs. They had to run quickly as possible, or maybe, you know, through the stockpile management, use a proper tarps, or maybe use the open and daytime cover and evening time, so that they have still have some continued drying going on in the stockpile. So especially when they get to the wet harvest condition, when where problem happens, they really need a good coordination between grower and hauler. The growers worry about the rainfalls coming. They want to pick up, the field run too quickly. They don't want to get wet and from rainfall. But that at the same time, if it's not properly dry, it causes trouble. But also so that they have to really watch out that, weather forecast. Make sure they don't shake the trees when the rainfall is coming. So really, but if you have not on the ground, get encounter rainfall, but they don't trying to pick up quickly. Trying to run, use dry on the open ground is faster than the stockpile. So that maybe trying to do, when the ground is dried up, it get in to do a maybe turn. This, if they already windrow, they can turn out windrow. If not, they maybe use a conditioner to get the debris and dry faster. So those actually can help to reduce the potential damage from rainfall. That's critical. So when grower deliver some high moisture loads of fuel run to the processor side, so during this rainfall event, so if possible, hauler shower should use mechanical drying to reduce the moisture to safe level as quickly as possible. If not, no drying equipment available, hauler shaller may try to dry on open ground with a fan or ventilation, not going to help to dry in faster to reduce the moisture. So do not stockpile when the lots are still of high moisture, at greater than 8%, there's an internal moisture. And the whole still soaking wet or green, especially get to the rainfall. So that's very critical. We encourage grower dry their rainfall wet not on the ground. Deliver properly dry product to hauler shaller. When hauler shaller receive high moisture note, they had to try to dry as quickly as possible.
Yeah. We're going to be right back after a word from our sponsors.
Agromayor Nursery is the premier nursery in California. Whether it's almonds, walnuts, pistachios, prunes, or olives, Agromayora has been the grower's source for over 20 years and is the home of Rootpack R Almond, Grizzly Walnut, and the North American plants UCB1 and Platinum Clonal Pistachio Rootstocks. As the worldwide leader in super high-density almonds, olives, and prunes, Agromayora can show you how to cut costs and increase yields with their super high-density rootstock Rootpack 20. For more information or to schedule a site visit, contact a representative at 530-812-3398 today.
Hi, we're back talking with Tim Birmingham, Director of Quality Assurance and Industry Services at Almond Board of California, and Guangwei Huang, Associate Director of Food Research and Technology, about almond stockpile management. Tim, my next question here is for you. What does the ideal site look like for creating a stockpile?
Yeah, so when you're choosing where to put your stockpiles, you really want to look for an area where you can have a raised or a slope bottom. That's going to help to drain any moisture away from the stockpile, and that's going to help with any mold growth. And then the shape and the positioning of the stockpiles can also be used to help control the moisture and the mold growth. As we mentioned earlier, you should have an even, flat top. It's going to help to avoid any hot pockets of condensation that can develop. And it's also going to help to maintain the moisture in the stockpile itself. The orientation of the stockpile, you really want to make sure that goes from north to south axis. That's going to also help to prevent mold, which usually will be worse on the north end of a pile if the long side is orientated on an east to west axis. So that's why we always like to see the stockpiles in north to south orientation.
With some of these larger harvests, Tim, I know that some growers also have the option of making their own stockpiles in their orchards as well. Do those stockpiles that the growers are creating look any different from the ones that the processors are creating, or are they kind of advised to follow the same guidelines that the processors are for those stockpiles?
Yeah, the same stockpiles that you would see at a hauler-shaller facility. The guidelines are the same if growers were to stockpile as well. We would advise that they, try to identify a location that is probably going to be away from the orchard on a flat, raised surface or slightly sloped surface for draining that moisture. And then all the same principles are going to apply. They want to orientate those north to south. They want to make sure that they're flat on top. And ideally, they'll put a white on black tarp and be monitoring the moisture levels within those stockpiles. But I think the preferred route would really be to get those almonds to the hauler sheller. Those folks are really well-versed in how to manage the stockpile. So I think that is probably the preferred route.
All right, we have time for one more question here. Guangwei, do you have any other tips for processors or growers looking forward to the upcoming harvest for proper stockpile management?
As you mentioned, we have, coming up a bigger crop. Definitely we're going to expect the more stockpile, longer stockpiling. So there is a huge coordination between growers and haulers is essential to ensure that properly dried fuel rind to be delivered to stockpiling. The grower really should closely monitor moisture to decide the pickup time. Trying to pick up the fuel rind during afternoon, if the moisture level are marginal, the hauler shoulder should measure moisture from each truckload or fuel rind, then mix the truckload from different zone of the orchard, because as I explained, there is some uneven drying in the orchard floor. So when they come in, trying to mix those in the evening light, and mix together probably better, and I have allowing some homogenized level in a zone. So if a hauler shallow receives some marginal the moisture level load, they can stockpile make a smaller stockpile and then closely monitor the stockpile, you know, managing through the, you know, use the tarps, a cover, uncover, you know, uncover during daytime, cover and allowing drying happen in daytime, and then cover in the evening time, preventing moisture pickup during evening time. So those are very critical. And that sometimes can happen if we encounter some wet harvest, but don't get panicked. Growers really take calm to do everything they can on the orchard floor, make sure properly dry before they deliver to the hauler shallower site. I think that's really critical for, you know, hauler shallower had to closely work together. You know, Tim, you might have other suggestions. I think it is definitely our grower knows, you know, how to handle the stuff. It's just only run to some extreme wet harvest condition, but don't be panicked, you know, and then work together, coordinate with the hauler shallower, you know, schedule right pickup time. Now maybe Tim, you can offer some your inside suggestions.
Yeah, I think as we hit on, the key is really controlling that moisture. And so from a grower standpoint, you know, you don't want to harvest when it looks like rain is in the forecast. If those nuts are already on the orchard floor and it gets rain, you want to make sure that you give them ample time to dry. And before the nuts are put into the stockpile, you ideally want to have those nuts with a kernel moisture of less than 6%. Those are the main things. And then, you know, once they're in the stockpile, making sure you're maintaining the and monitoring the stockpile properly.
One last thing here. I just kind of want to clarify something that you mentioned there, Guangwei, a bit ago about kind of that creating that homogenized drying scenario. So you're saying that some nuts from different parts of the orchard will have higher moisture content than others. And so you don't want to pair just those higher moisture content nuts together. You kind of want to mix them all together to kind of speed up that drying process. Am I correct in saying that?
Yeah, that's you're right. That's basically what I'm trying to say. Maybe I didn't say clearly. It's really because there is uneven drying from orchard ground. You know, when hauler shallower receive those truckload, when they measure moisture, they know what the moisture in each truckload. So they can maybe, you know, when they do make a stockpile, they can mix those slightly higher moisture and the dry product with dry product load. That way make it more even, because in the during stockpiling, especially under the tarp coverage, you know, this is really equilibrate. You know, they can, you know, basically there's a slightly higher moisture can be absorbed by the drier product. So make it more even moisture level for the whole product. This is good practice. I think, you know, some of those experienced hauler shallower is doing this. I think I encourage other hauler follow those two. Other device, maybe hauler shallower can look into it, especially now with the new tool available, those are portable, or, you know, the, you know, Wi-Fi access sensors. So hauler shallower can explore to use some of those humidity sensor or temperature sensor placed in the different part of a stockpile. They can read from their app to look at, you know, how humidity change. If, you know, they don't even have to open the tarps. Like, you know, like Tim mentioned, it's critical point. They have to continue to monitor the change of humidity, because humidity closely relate to moisture level. So if they have some portable or Wi-Fi accessible the sensor, they can read the you know the humidity or temperature from the from stockpile, different spot stockpile. They know if it's a you know they need to take some action. If they need to open the tarp to allowing you know some condensation evaporate, or maybe you know it's never marginal. You want to run this pile, you know, process this pile sooner than the other pile. This is some device and some new tools Holler Scholler can explore to help them wisely managing the stockpiles. Management is it take a time. They just need to closely monitor change the humidity change in the stockpile. It's not always you receive the lot that truckload from ultra gram and then the you know, stockpile left there alone for several months. I don't think that's good practice. So there's definitely some new tool can help the Holler Scholler to reduce some burden in there for the close monitoring.
Okay. Well, Tim and Guang Wei, really critical information coming from you both today about almond stockpile management, especially looking ahead to this upcoming harvest, which is supposed to be big. So thank you for both coming on today and providing some clarification on that stockpile management.
Thank you. Thank you. Great talk to you.
Yeah, thank you, Taylor.
Yeah, great to have you both on. This is Taylor with My Ag Life.
That's our show for today. If there's a topic you'd like to hear about, send me an email to sabrina@myaglife.com. This is the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I am Sabrina Halverson. From the JCS Marketing Team, thank you for listening.